It's the day after 420. Ready to keep the trip going? Mark Brinkerhoff and his wife Phyllis continued the discussion with me, an interview with an extraterrestrial, part two, the Mark Brinkerhoff evidence. That's right, I challenge Mark to give a little bit of credibility to his claims, and both him and Phyllis more than deliver. And I know I mentioned 420 at the beginning of this, so when you heard delivery, maybe you were thinking, look, we here at Open Loops, we do not condone illegal delivery of narcotics, but we do condone altered state delivery via auditory podcast absorption. This story did it for me. However, if you want to add on to the experience of it all, go to the Open Loops Podcast YouTube channel, link in the notes, subscribe, and you'll be able to see, premiering a little later today, the video of Mark and Phyllis live. You can see the artwork, you can see the photos, you can see Mark. You'll get a full experience of who this man is and the integrity of his statements. The full interview, premiering on Open Loops YouTube channel today. And of course, as always, if you like this podcast, go to ratethispodcast.com/openloops and let us know. Like it, follow it on Apple Podcasts, rate the show, leave a review. That's how we get the extraterrestrials to keep coming back on. Without further ado, here's part two of Interview with an Extraterrestrial. That was something I was going to ask. I'm going, okay, yeah, this is, and again, this is more, you know, what people that might be playing devil's advocate might say. Well, wait a minute, they're interdimensional, and also they have this advanced technology. Who are the aliens that failed driving school? You know, why are some of them, why did they crash? What in the world is going on there? Now, look, that's not to say that everybody's perfect, and we're not saying that extraterrestrials are demigods, though I do have to say, with all the stories of healings and whatnot, seems pretty close. But it's always interesting that that we might have evidence of something that seems so in a different level of consciousness. I'm going, oh, if you crashed, why can't, you know, the extraterrestrial council say, oh, we're just going to disintegrate, we're gonna dissolve this on Earth, and they're going to be out of existence so that nobody knows that we're here. Yeah, I don't know. What would you say to that?
Well, what happened with Roswell, from my understanding on the other side, was the many of the ships, well, little scouts and all, these are kind of scout ships, and they're not that huge, maybe 30-foot diameter or so, but they're scouting, they're not analyzing, they're mining, they're doing things. We have information of, and I'll tell you later. God. Okay, so they're mining or doing things on Earth. They travel ley line frequencies sometimes, patterns of frequency that come out of the planet, looks like energy like this and goes like that, like an aura, and it can travel them. But also they travel with anti-gravity type things that they use. But from the Roswell one, one of them might have malfunctioned where it was traveling on one of the lines and just something happened and abruptly pulled it down. Another thing they can do is militaries have other things. They can shoot particle beams, or what are those things called? Like
you mean the direct energy weapons?
Yeah, direct things like that.
They may have had them longer than we think.
Yeah, and right. Trevor James Constable, they had, they could, what's his name? Rats, I forgot his name. He had a beam that he would aim at the ships, and the ship would feel it, sense it, and it would start wobbling and dematerialize. So he was shooting at these negative beings that he thought the ships were coming from a negative energy, negative wow. dimensional space.
Wilhelm Reich? No.
Was it Reich?
I don't remember. It's gone. Too
wasn't
long
he
ago.
Working with Trevor James Constable? It was one of those types of things. But they would set up a tubular thing, and he would aim it towards what the ship would be that he sees or comes in, and it would go like that, and it would go poof, and just dematerialize, go back through the patterns of the frequency they open up. But they open up door frequencies, and we've seen it. I know what they're doing. I know how they do it. I've seen how they do it because I've been on the ships when we did them. So remember the sonic booms in the 70s?
Yeah.
That was happening on North Carolina area out in the ocean. I was on one of the ships one time when they were doing one of these things, and they're not to affect the earth in any way. They were actually working with frequency patterns happening from negative frequencies that were occurring around that whole area. I don't know why, but maybe military stuff going on. Who knows? Maybe they were doing something with frequencies with earth. They were doing something, meaning earth people were doing something.
Yeah.
And so they came in and did a cleansing frequency. And when it happened on earth, it came through as a sound like a boom. So I remembered being on one when they did it, but we didn't hear the boom effect. It was a more physical effect.
Yeah.
There was a guy that we met a long time ago, back in the 80s. Friend of a friend saying
the guy that was talking about the
he gave us a name, but that it's not his real name. So he said it's undercover name, whatever name. He worked with military, and he was the reason he wanted to meet us
was a weapons expert.
He was a bomb expert and a weapons mm-hmm. expert, and he
could defuse a nuclear bomb.
He could defuse nuclear bombs, right? And reason we knew. When they were trying to go in to get Saddam Hussein about weapons, they said were there. We knew there was not. That was a lie because our friend, the guy, enabled all the bombs that were there. So that even if they were underground, they were all disabled. He said they're all gone. They're all disabled. When he told us that back in the early 80s. So when they said we were going in to get weapons of destruction,
mass destruction,
yeah.
We knew it was a hoax, and we knew there was a trick involved, and it was just a lie, only because of that guy who we knew. That there were no bombs.
Jonathan
there.
Or something like
yeah, that. Yeah, he called himself John. That's the name. No last name. That was his name. But it wasn't his real name, he told us. So the reason he wanted to meet with us and had told his friend, who was his girlfriend at the time, who was our friend, because I had these experiences on UFOs, he said, I want to meet them because something happened and I wanted to talk to these people. So he came and he told me things that I knew already back in the 70s about the layers underground in England and all these places where they have way down tunnels underground, not just tunnels, they're levels underground where they live and have everything they need if anything right. goes wrong on top surface. They're not tunnels, they were levels, actual places.
Deep underground military bases.
Deep underground.
Dumps.
And I met a guy in England in 78 who went into those things because he was laying telephone line. One guy was telephone line.
Finish the computer. John story.
So they're all matching together. So John said he was in the California one in the mountains out there. Which California mountains were they? The ones opposite Nevada, those Nevada mountain areas, California. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of tunnels and, underground levels there of building that they've made. So he was out there called in to look at something. Being a bomb expert, the scientists called him in to come over. So he had to get extra clearance and extra ways to get into this place since he had never been there before. And when he gets there, he goes into a tunnel with a car, a truck, whatever he did. And then he goes down in elevators that are down way low down. So he goes into the elevators and he meets with the people there, and they're scientists. And there were some other people there, he said, that were there for another reason, other kinds of scientists.
Right.
But one of the scientists pulls him aside and says, we called you because we want you to see something because we can't figure out how it works and we don't know how to get into it. And he was intrigued, right? So he says, okay, let's go see. And he finds out from that scientist, this was taken from one of the Roswell ships. And
wow.
He drew a picture of it. But as he was telling me, just by the scientists taken from a Roswell ship. I said, it's probably one of their sonic cannons. That's the only word I can use for it. And he drew a picture, and I was probably picking up telepathically from him. And he drew a picture of it. So a long tubular, 4.5 feet at most, or something like that, 5 feet at the most, 4.5 feet. Very, he's like this, it's like that. A tubular object, a tube, but like that.
Right.
Goes out. Then he draws two cylinders and tripod effect on the legs. And the tubular thing is attached to these two cylinder things. And he's, I remember him saying one cylinder was larger than the other. They look chromey and silver, brushed silver, he said. Brushed chrome effect, brushed like silver.
Right, right.
And there was no seams on it and no way to get into it. And the scientist said, we tried to drill it. We tried to this. Nothing gets into this thing. So we decided to x-ray it the best we can. So they x-rayed it. And that's what they wanted him there for, to see the x-ray pictures and see if they can make out it's a bomb of some kind or something weaponry. What is it? So he looked at it, and he saw the x-rays, he said, and it looked kind of, no, it's not a bomb, he said, but it is some kind of a thing that they're using as might be a projection, it might be a weapon, but not like we know, maybe, you know, he couldn't figure it out. It definitely wasn't a bomb. So the scientist says, let me show you what we were able to do with it.
Right.
You know, so then the end of the room, a big room, he said, like a warehouse effect down there, you know, big cement wall down, I don't know how many feet, 20, 30 feet away or 50 feet. He says a big cement block wall. And then behind it was more walls, you know, regular walls. So he said, the scientist said, look what we could do with this thing. He hooked it up to some kind of mechanism, like an electronic thing. They used something that they had to turn it on. I don't remember him telling us there was anything that they could touch on this thing that could turn it on. So you were using some kind of magnetics or some other frequencies to activate this contraption. But I called it a sonic cannon because in those different beings that are mining the planets or different ones they need work, they have cannons or sonic beam makers that will blast a hole into the planets or the planet, the size they need or want, depending on how much they want. And they're going to go into mine for minerals or things that they need for their ships and for what they're working with. That's just not just planet Earth, other planets too. So these beams can create this, but they won't usually use them as a weapon to aim at anybody else. They'd just use it on planets like mining. So when he said, let's show this guy, let's show what it does, he goes, okay. So the scientist turns it on. And it had a frequency beam sound, he said, and it projected an energy ray out at the cement wall and blasted a hole through the wall.
Wow.
And he went back to see it. So it was a couple of bricks, one of those building bricks, the big bricks, cement blocks. It was deep like that. So that he went back with the scientist and he said, that's amazing. And the scientist said, if I had it higher, it would blast through the walls past it and keep going. That shows you the way that they mined with it. So when I told them that was a mining thing, they would do that to other things. It makes a beautiful glass effect on the sides of the walls when it blasts through. And he was shocked. He thought that made sense to him, that that would be what it would be used for. Knowing that back in 1982 or 3, whatever that year was, now you see what they got today that they're playing with in the sky.
Yeah.
For the wrong reasons. They're using it as a particle generator or particle or something. They're doing something with it because it is a weapon. If it's used improperly, yes. But if it's used for mining and gentle things like they use it for, no. If you're going to go into a meteor out there and get your minerals off a meteor, boom, they use their little thing, however big a hole they need because they're little grays. So they get in there, but the thing could get bigger if they needed it. So in England, they have these tunnels too. They're big glass walls that I met another guy, Bob Strong, that had been there. I think Bob is now passed on, but he told me his story back in 1978 when he was underground, working underground under Warminster and as a electronics and things they were doing for electricity or something, putting underground or telephones, whatever it was.
I think it was telephones.
Might have been telephones, yeah.
Right.
So But he and his friend were down there where they had the heads with the lamps on their hats. And they're all told not to go beyond a certain point in the perimeter of their underground there. There's tunnels underground. And he says, oh, England's full of tunnels. He says, all over the place, tunnels, deep, deep tunnels. So now we know that's true, of course. So he says his friend and him decided on a lunch break, we're going to go down there and not go up on top and have lunch. We had sandwiches. So they went down into the area they're not supposed to go to and looked around. And they had their little pickaxe thing, too, with them, they said. It's a little thing that they could carry. So he said, they're going down. They came to a walls that were a room that he said a semi-truck could fit in, or in their case, lorries, they call them. So they saw the walls. They got to a section where it's split in two, and they decided to go to the right. They said the walls were like glass when you touched them and smooth. He said they couldn't figure out how that happened. Then they walked a little further, and they see a big wall on their right that looked like another giant round circular area where a lorry could go through, or another spaceship or something that's 15 feet wide maybe, or whatever. So they go to that thing, and it's a solid wall, and they tap on it with their picks, and they can't scratch or anything into it, and it made a little dinging sound. And that was basically what they found, that they felt was not of this earth. And then they had a feeling they were being watched. And I said, you probably were when you did dinging on the thing. But anyway, they felt they were being watched. So they kind of nonchalantly left and went back to where they're supposed to be and didn't say anything to other guys that worked there. So he was telling me how they've seen these other tunnels underground in different areas that people he's known. So these are these underground glass-like walls, big enough for little scout ships to go flying through them even 1,000 years ago. Because yeah, they know they're old. They don't know how old, but they've always been there.
Yeah, can you, I mean, look, I don't know if you can give away this information, but is there a place people could go in the United States where they could see an entrance to one of these tunnels and know, yes, this is a real thing?
I don't know. I wouldn't be privy to that.
You could probably Google it.
I think there are places you can go.
Because it's such a wide claim, right? They're all over the place, and yet they're so well protected.
Yeah, but if they're military run, you don't want to go there because they're not, you know, they don't want to say.
You really don't want to go.
Yeah.
You know, you really don't know.
You don't know if you come back up on top.
Oh, that's fair.
Who's managing it?
Yeah, we don't know who they are. I do have another story, fast, very quick. I ran in the 70s. Some people were, a couple of them were out in the west, out in the desert areas of California, in those areas out there. And there were little hills and rocks and stuff. And they were walking around, chiseling around, looking for things. And they didn't know. They were in an area that was military, but they found out. They were talking, and all of a sudden they heard a voice in their head say, you should not be here right now. Turn around and go back to where you came from. And it was, they looked around and went, who said that? There's nobody out here, but we're out here. Then they noticed in the hills that they were moving around by were these antennas coming up out of the rocks area. You don't notice them until you're close enough. But they had already went through the parameter that they were told there were signs, don't go beyond this point. But they did, because they were exploring around the rocks and things and hoping to find stuff or in the dirt, whatever they were doing. So they heard, they saw these antennas, and they realized somehow these guys are projecting through the antennas to them, and they're hearing them in their heads. And we know that's possible. But back then when it happened, they were scared. They got, you know, they turned around. It was the military. Okay, we're out of here. But they couldn't figure out where's the speaker, who's talking. And now time is gone. But how they do that is they can put the projection up with their antenna, use the teeth or fillings in your teeth, and you'll hear the sound in your head of them talking to you.
Oh.
You can do that back then. Because that's the only way they
so
could have
heard. So
if
they were doing that back then, you can imagine what they're doing now.
And right. That's what I mean. What are they doing
we
now?
We won't even go into what we
when people are saying in certain areas, you can hear someone tell you something in your head to get out or do something. That's the technology they have. They
right. Well, people talk about being a targeted individual and how that works, right? They can torture you electronically. So many people make these claims that have never quite It sounds terrible what our government does to people, if it is our government.
If it is, yeah. Who is it? But the frequencies, they can manipulate certain frequencies, and you can have euphoric, all the kind of things can go on with a person or an animal, if they're testing an animal.
Yeah. But
You know, we don't know. We don't go there. But
really, that's not our area of expertise. We prefer to try to put people on a spiritual path to getting off of these lower levels, yeah. You know, in any on any planet.
Yep.
That's really interesting.
That's what we're trying to do. When I came here, when I was told by Yehoshua as a teenager, and he said, do what you do and say what you say, and all of it, meaning what I know from where I come from, where I am with Sananda, we're part of the whole cruise up there that he is in control of everything. He runs it all, basically, and he's creator. So when we on the high realms know who he is, we bow. He appears on our ship. You do that.
It's not information you're hearing from anybody else.
You'll not get that from a negative reptilian. They don't do that. They don't recognize who's who, what's going on. People on the seventh plane of this planet, seventh plane.
Still may not know.
Might not know exactly who Sananda is or who Yehoshua is.
Yeah.
As the infinite one. The true Messiah, as they call it. But that's who he is.
The problem.
He does many missions like that around the different galaxies.
The problem for humanity or for creation is that the good thing and the bad thing is that we have free will.
Yeah.
And even the creator will not override the free will of any of its children. So if we choose not to believe something, it's not going to say, oh, excuse me, you're wrong. Mm. It waits for us to figure it out on our own. And then if we go and we ask, let's say in an out-of-body state or in a dream state,
yeah, or just a dream,
or just ask. Yeah. We just say to people, ask the question of your creator, is this true? Is this right? And, you know, at some point you will get the actual answer back, but it may not be the one that you want to hear.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's just interesting that we are that blessed that we have, you know, free will, but that free will can do us in as well.
So the information I brought back with me was not to share originally. I didn't know. I wasn't supposed to share some stuff. I told Phyllis some things when I first met her in 78, plus some people in England. When I was not allowed to share it, I was told to only the people that I could feel right with. So the people that I met in England had encounters or had experiences. So I knew them. I recognized my friend Mike from space. So I was allowed to tell him some information. And then we would go out to the ships together and they'd remember, and as well as Phyllis. So she's been out on the ships with us, but I'm not me. And when they would be out of body with me on the ship, they didn't know I was me. When I talked to them, they thought I was an alien. The other two guys, the other alien friends of mine, they said, no, it was me. I was talking to you.
Yeah,
I was walking with you down the hall. One of my friends, he didn't know it was me. I'm walking with him down the hall. Once he figured it was me, when we were going out again after other times, because I was in England for a couple of months, 2 months almost, right? Was in England. So it's like we were going out of body every night, and I'd be on the ship with my friend and telling him things. We wake up, we come back, we're on cots in the living room. So we wake up and I said, are you back? He says, yeah, I just got back. I said, wasn't that fun? Did you remember what we were talking about? He says, yeah. So now he recognized that I was the alien one.
But now when you're talking about being on the ship, you're not talking about being on the highest Archon.
No,
you're
I'm talking about being a ship, right?
Being on the ships that are circulating the Earth, like the Ashtar ships, the 2,000 miles long. So, you know, the problem for Mark is that when he's speaking, I know what he's talking about, but he forgets to point to the frequency he's speaking about, like what level of consciousness were they going to, because those ships can also have multiple levels of consciousness. So you could have different levels or different frequencies on these ships. So, you know, everything, all one size does not fit all.
Sometimes a person just out of body and doesn't understand much about higher things going on. So they might be coming out to the first frequencies of the ship on the high etheric levels here within this first plane. So they can walk around and be there out of body in a dream state, a lucid dream, but be out of body when you're that way lucid. So they won't be on another level within the ship of frequency. And the more you learn, you can go to other frequencies within the ship, other levels.
You know, I think
just different It's also, a ship, but it's different levels of
I'd
it.
I'd also like to say about that, you know, we're talking about very beautiful, positive extraterrestrial beings that are on these ships. So people that are of a very negative nature or what we call lower frequency are not going to get onto those ships.
No.
So if they could get onto some other ship that's maybe not an Aetherian ship, maybe it's, from some other group of extraterrestrials, we won't name names, that are more like humans or more like unevolved humans. So maybe their frequencies would match with that. As your frequency, as your level of awareness, spiritual awareness gets higher, and you become like more benevolent and more understanding and more open, that's sort of your path to get to these higher frequencies on these beautiful benevolent ships.
I'm glad she's here to tell me all these things again. I ramble off. I'm so sorry.
No, it's all good. I mean,
really being like a little wild horse.
Well, you know, Mark is not like us. He doesn't,
I think I assume.
He always assumes that you know the frequency he's talking about, but I know he jumps frequencies when he's talking, just like, you know, I don't even know how to make an analogy to express it. But it's like we're all trying to move through the, we're all trying to, you know, grow in the lives that we have in any situation, in any lifetime. I mean, I'm sure you believe in reincarnation, and I'm sure you know you've had other lifetimes. If not, I'd be very surprised that you're doing a show like this. But
well, truthfully, you know what? I am not sure. I come from a very open-minded, but because I don't believe I have, at least as far as I'm aware of it, had any what might classify as paranormal experiences, I'm much more on the skeptic leaning side. Now, I entertain these ideas, but, for someone that really is trying to make sense of the world in a rational way, which I realize is kind of the issue with that, with exploring these topics, because it's beyond rational mind. But yes, someone with such a strong...
But the only reason that it's beyond rational mind is because they have withheld true knowledge from the entire planet. If everybody, let's say, knew what Mark and Ingo Swann knows, like Ingo, I think, said what he had in 6 lifetimes. I forget how many lifetimes. He didn't have too many. And he's now, Mark's already seen him in space on the higher planes. He now understands.
Yeah, things now he gets it.
That he didn't even understand.
One of the things he said when I talked about the moon with him, and I saw what's in the moon, and he saw that remote viewing with the scientists that he was being tested with, and other things we saw. He says, of all the people on planet Earth I've ever met, you're the only one who's seen what I've seen in the moon. And so that day I was like, whoa. But that, I think, is all the things that pulled him. Like, we became like, that was it.
It was family.
He trusted us with things.
But I do want to say, just to play to your more rational mind, Greg.
I want to believe, Phyllis. Believe me. That's why I'm talking to people like you both. Trust me.
You know what's funny? When Mark was being investigated by the MUFON group back in the late 70s. And so, you know, because MUFON back then wanted to be nuts and bolts. Everything was nuts and bolts. If it wasn't nuts and bolts, we don't want to know anything. Right, and Mark was getting all of these photos of UFOs, which, you know, back then, if you got one photo, you were considered a superstar. But Mark was getting so many photographs of UFOs that they were like, you know, what's up with this guy?
Then you can come out with Skywatch with me and come by and everything.
So, yeah, exactly. Huh. So then there was this one time Fred had, you know, Anna had Mark's images analyzed and said, well, you know, you're going to use my camera tonight. So he put, I think, a Nikon, maybe F1 or F2 in Mark's hands.
He was a professional type
of photographer. Which Mark wouldn't even know what that means. But
at that time, I had a little brownie.
Right.
I know what it means, but he doesn't. But so he gave him his camera. So he loaded it. Fred loaded the film in there. So he knew there was no hanky panky. Gave Mark the camera. Mark went out as usual.
But he took my cameras to get analyzed.
And he took his
camera. That's why he did that.
So he gave Mark his camera loaded and everything. So Mark went out and took pictures. And of course, Mark got some anomalous imagery on there that he just could not explain. And so when the
they're on the website too.
So when the other group came along, the Scientific Bureau of Investigation, which was made up of about 1,000 cops, policemen across the country, and wow. The guy that was in charge was a New York detective. So talk about skeptical. He would put you to shame.
right.
So he
it's Pete Mazzola.
He found out that Mark had a photograph. So he came
from Tim Beckley.
So he came over, made an appointment to come and see us, and came to see us and said, well, you know, I heard, you know, you have a photograph. So Mark goes and gets his bag of transparencies and photographs of UFOs and puts them on
the manila envelope like this big.
Pete and the other guy were like,
wait a minute, what? I had Super 8 movie film. I had 126
camera. So then they decided to do analysis slides on Mark's photography. So, you know, he would be over here constantly and stay all night long. His police cruiser would be parked outside of our building right in front of the fire hydrant. But of course, nobody would bother it because it was police cruiser. And he would come up and he would hang out with us, Pete would.
Till like 3 a.m.
And he would try to, and he would just talk to Mark over and over again to see if Mark was ever going to change his story, was ever going to, you know, mess up and not, you know, say exactly the same thing that he would always say. And then one day he even took him to have a psychological stress evaluation test with that's a lie detector test that he found a person in the yellow pages.
Yeah.
So that they're, you know,
someone they don't know.
They took Mark over. They asked him some very pertinent.
That was in New Jersey too.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah.
Asked him a array of questions. And of course, Mark passed with flying colors.
Right.
The operator of the machine said, I thought this one would get him.
This question, he doctored it perfectly. He said,
what did he say?
Sorry about that. We told people don't call.
No, we're yeah. getting the value. We've been going for a while.
What happened is he talked with the guy. Phils and I were in another room, like a waiting area. And then I had to go into another room and get hooked up to the machine.
Right.
And I didn't know anything. Didn't know what they were going to do. All the questions were, the first ones are always like yes, no questions to make sure they can find your monitor, whatever you're doing. Yeah, is your mother? You know, I don't know what they ask. Just regular questions. But when he gets to the deep questions of being taken, he said, this is the question he formed with Pete or told Pete that he was going to form when Pete told him what he wanted questions about being taken on board a spaceship.
Physically.
Hmm. So the question was, were you physically taken on board an extraterrestrial spaceship, not of this earth, at the age of 5 in a field upstate New York? Something like that. And then was taken around the earth and around the moon and into the solar system and come back? I said, yes. So he thought that one would trick me up somehow with that kind of weird questioning, but it didn't. And then he had some other questions that were kind of extraterrestrial.
So that was that. And then when they took all of Mark's, they said, okay, we'd like to do an investigation with all of your film and your cameras. And they took all of Mark's film, all of his film. We allowed him to take the negatives.
Think of it today. You wouldn't do that,
and
right?
And the Super 8 film and everything. And all of the cameras. And they said, yeah, sure, go, you know.
I was trusting them totally.
Analyze it.
Phils and I had prayed about a week or so before.
Right. So
about sending somebody who can help us.
I can usually do these things a lot faster than Mark. So they took all the camera equipment, and then it went to three different places. We noted on the website. I'd have to go look at it. But one of them was Komen von Kavitsky.
Brown Saucer Watch.
And Professor Nimstow, who was
Project Visit.
But he was a NASA
ex-NASA scientist.
So these, all of Mark's films and cameras were analyzed by these three different places. And it was a few thousand dollars worth of analysis, which at the time was a lot of money.
That's like 1978.
And so, you know, they spent a lot of money examining all of his film to try to find where he hoaxed it or light leaks in the cameras. And they said they couldn't find any. They tried to replicate one of the flying light bars that was on the Super 8 film. And they said they couldn't figure out a way to replicate it.
Because it was bent light. It was bent light.
So
it comes in like a bent light object and goes like this.
But the point being,
and they tried to mimic it.
After all that analysis, they could not disprove that this film had been in any way faked.
And von Kavitsky said that, and the scientists said that it came out as solid light objects on the film, even though I was aiming my camera at the sky. And I told telepathically talking with them, and they said, take the picture now. They projected onto the camera film that were let come onto the film what they wanted to see.
And then the one time when we actually were photographing a spacecraft that flew over us when we were out with Betty Hill up in New Hampshire.
We couldn't.
That, you know, it's so funny when you see something fly over your head so low that's so spectacular, like a football field that's like a
things Trapper bigger than a football field or more.
And I was ripping Mark's arm off. Mark was, instead of picking up his camera and shooting it, he picked up his binoculars to look at it. I thought Betty Hill was going to drop dead on the spot because she just stood there
with a cigarette,
just like, and
as soon as it crossed over us, it disappeared.
But we got the lights in the distance. We got the light.
First thing we saw was two amber light ball energies sitting over the distance, hovering.
But anyway.
And then they went like this. And they started coming towards us, thinking they're two spheres. But they ended up being a giant ship that was hexagon.
Nothing you've ever seen.
Cut corners, long, rectangular craft.
But
appendages hanging under it.
After all of that analysis, nobody could disprove that the film was faked, that there was anything wrong with the cameras. And so that they were just sort of left, you know, they just tried to disprove Mark as much as they possibly could. They went out of their way to say, well, you know, this is blah, 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 blah. So then they brought over a map one night and they said, we want to go on a sky watch with you. And here's a map. So they gave him a map.
Big map that New York and New Jersey and Pennsylvania.
Did they blindfold you?
Did they? No. We closed all the lights, so the whole apartment was dark.
Right.
And I stood in front of our table in this area here. We had a different table, big square rectangle. So the map was there, and I had magic markers. And you know how you can kind of dimly see the light is off, everything's off, but you could still dimly see. But even if you looked at this map, it was just dark. You couldn't see anything on it. So I said, okay, I'll just circle what glows to me. So I asked him, I said, is there any place we should be? My crew and friends, I said, is there any place that we should go to? Just make it glow of whatever the area is, and I'll circle the area. So I saw a glow. So I went over and circled the area around the glow. And for some reason, we thought of earthquakes. We mentioned something with an earthquake, and a little glow showed up. So I circled that. For other glows, that was about it. I think that was the big circle.
So it ended up being Wanacue Reservoir. So we made arrangements to go on a sky watch with the investigators. And that was the night we heard the first time we heard a Bigfoot. But anyway, they brought a bunch of Kentucky Fried Chicken.
And barrel.
We went up into the woods, started a campfire. There were people that were waiting down below the little ledge that we were on.
We're on a high ledge.
It started to rain, so they all took off. So once they took off.
But before all that, when we were doing this, I had a whole out-of-body lucid memory of the whole thing a week before. I saw the road. I saw where we were going. I've never been there before, but in this whole thing, I was in the car driving it within the back seat or so, and they were driving. And I'm seeing a railroad track. I'm seeing all these things and how they're going to do things in the sky when we ask them.
But I don't believe...
We did go over a railroad track.
I don't believe... Yes, sure. I don't believe that Pete had ever seen a UFO yet.
No, no.
So, you know, they were like, they were game.
Yeah.
And so we were out there with the fire going and everything. And, you know, it was getting...
And while we were there, though, we were in the car down by the reservoir area in a pullover. And these people pulled over this group, UFO group from New Jersey, that somehow found out. And even Pete said, well, didn't want anybody around, but they somehow found out. I was saying to Pete what was going to happen. It's going to rain. It's going to stop at certain times, but nothing's going to happen until all the people leave. And we were prepared to stay for the whole night to the next morning. So we were just going to stay up all night. So on and off the rain would go from weird hours, like 9 p.m., 10 minutes of rain, then it stopped. In the rain, downpour or something, a car or two would beep and leave and they would take off. So we climbed up onto, went up the trail onto the top. And one of the guys made the fire and we were up there with umbrellas and stuff. But gradually as cars left, you would hear beep, beep, and a car would disappear. So we'd look over the cliff and there would still be one or two cars left. So I'm looking at the sky and it looked all cloudy. And they said, it's going to look like this until they leave. So I told Pete, until those people leave, nothing's going to happen. So they're trying to dissuade him by turning rain on, which they can do, and they can do that, making it rain, make it like annoying, and let's get out of here. It's not going to happen. It's going to be clouds. So they finally took off, and it was close to 1 a.m. in the morning or a little after 1 a.m. when they finally took off. They waited till these people are gone. You see the lights going away in the woods. And here we are up on the top here, and look up. Perfect hole appears through the clouds. Right to the stars, and the clouds are diminishing slowly. But they punch. They can do that. They've done it for me as a way back with my friend Ralph too. So they punch a hole in the sky for us to see, to know that this was a setup that was all being set up. Gradually, then we did the telepathy call, which I try to tell people about, which is part of Adonai Vasu Baragas. That's part of the call. It means blessings always in the infinite light of our loving, radiant, infinite creator. It's on my website, so it's there. But that's part of the call I would always give. But there's other things I say for them to come, my family, my friends, my crew friends, or friends with Ashtar that I know. So this has been happening. So we called the call, waited a little bit, and the first rovers show up. Those are the ones that look like spaceship that resemble bright stars like high up in the sky.
It could be a satellite look.
They look like a. They could look like a satellite, but they look like a star. And they showed up. They do their little thing. They take right turns. They just dematerialize. It did with Betty Hill. That happened too. So we have. They show up. We call them. I called them rovers since I can remember.
Oh, and they would also.
They shoot. Do this type of thing. Then they go shut off. But
shoot probes.
Sometimes they used to shoot a probe, right?
Which is like it looks like a shooting star.
Yeah, we've done that too. We've done it too for people in upstate New York. With like one spot, the ship is there invisible to your eyes, but they're really there. And I said, if you're right there, I see you telepathically. I know you're there. Shoot some probes so my friends can see. So they go, poof, 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 light beam shoots.
Oh my gosh.
And you can see it. So then somebody else shows up and they're, I don't see anything. I don't know what you were looking at. They're still by the same area.
Well, anyway,
back. They did it again. Three in a row.
Back
in
the same spot. Back to Pete.
So Pete, we did this. They did the rovers come in, do a little thing, get your attention. Here they go. They're scout ships, and Pete and his partner were there with binoculars and things. And two ships came in over the hills and the mountains in the distance, and they were watching them do this little thing that they do. So those were the Pete's first experiences with UFOs. But we did have something come over us and go, and not a little tiny dot either, like a ship went over. So this was exciting.
And he was yelling out.
And he was calling out,
Joe. And he didn't know why. Now, remember, this is a hardened New York detective.
I used to call my spaceship in the 1960s when I was about 11. If I was talking about spaceships to my friends in school, which I didn't have many of, to talk in public, we made up the name for the TV show Bonanza, Little Joe. So if we're talking about Little Joe, people think you're talking about Bonanza. We're talking about a spaceship. So when I told Pete that, we called it Little Joe or Joe. If we were talking together at a lunch break, we'd be saying, yeah, is Joe coming tonight? I'll say, yeah, around 8 o'clock. I always knew what time. They always told me what time they'll show up if I just said it. So I said, 9 o'clock, they'll be here.
So the bottom line is
that's why Pete was going, Joe.
That was the night. So he got to see something for the first time. And then later on, as we were just around the campfire talking, that's when we heard two Bigfoots or Big Feet, or whatever you want to call them.
Bigfoot.
Sasquatch. Calling to each other from across. One
came from one direction.
And calling. It was haunting. It was haunting.
And Pete's partner was also a person that lived near Jersey and knew about hunting and all that. And he never heard an animal sound like that. And I've been upstate in the woods and all that. I don't hunt. I don't hear anything. But I've been in the woods and I've never heard anything like this. And we heard the voice come from, let's say, our left. But the other voice came from the other direction in answer to the other voice that was calling.
So Bigfoot is real too? Is that what we're getting from this?
We saw one standing outside the road.
That was another time.
Very close.
But so when that happened, I said, get the chicken out of the campsite.
They like chicken. So
they took the chicken. The chicken. And ran as fast as they could.
Took it down to another trail somewhere and left it. It was just mild rain right now, a little sprinkling of rain.
If the Bigfoot was hungry.
It was a call that was so weird and haunting. It did sound like an animal, then it sounded like a person. It was like, as best I can mimic it, if I try to mimic it again.
Where do we think this is from? Is it an extraterrestrial thing? Is it interdimensional? I mean, what is this Bigfoot?
Bigfoot are real, and they're a race of beings. Yeah, they're like, well, we're humans, but they might have a genetic connection. Remember, on planet Earth, there were other races or beings here that were human that were here, like we are, but they went extinct. Yet, if they stood by you, you would say, oh, that's a human. But if you genetically took them, their genetics, they're kind of human like us, but there was always something else a little different. So they're not exactly human like we are, the human race here, this one now. They were another human race with different genetic, little off, different coding.
We don't think they're all the same.
But as if we're all related.
We don't think they're all the same, because some people might see some that look a little bit less human than ones that you saw.
We saw there's different kinds of Sasquatch out there. Some that are kind of mean, hurt people that might look more ape-like in some way or with different teeth. The one that we saw was very loving and benevolent energy. Probably about 10 feet tall. Maybe he was off the side of the road. He was very tall already. He was off the side of the road. But his face was more human looking. I don't know how to explain it. He had lips like a human's lips, but elongated. He had brown eyes, that look human, like ours, not like a monkey, not like another animal. And I was looking out the window on the passenger side right at him. And he was not even 4 feet from the car. So I'm looking at his face, and he's actually good looking for the humanoid look he had. And his nose was not ape-like or any of that. And not flat, like an ape-like nose. It was not like that at all, or monkey nose, nothing like that. He had hair coming like this, and the hair stood out about 4 inches out. It was very out on his shoulders, big, broad shoulders, no neck look.
Yeah, like definitely this. No neck.
Yeah, long, big shoulders. And the hair was standing up, and that's what we could see in the distance as we were driving. We could see this. First, we thought it was a bush blocking the green big sign of the highway. We were down towards North Carolina. I think we were in Virginia in the big woods area off 95, I think. And it was after 1 a.m. or so, around that time. So it was a lot of cars. We could see this thing. We think, well, who would have a bush blocking the highway signs? Why didn't they cut that to make it visible? So we're getting closer and closer on the passenger side road, on that side of the highway. And now the sign is still invisible. We can't read it. Now this thing's getting bigger and actually has a shape. And Phyllis and I went, it can't be a bear. It's just standing on high land. It's gotta be a Bigfoot standing up. And you can see the hair sticking out. It was very amazing. So we get up to it, it's dark brown, fur hair. But the skin tone was brownish tanned, not white skinned and not black skinned, but more tannish brownish, but lighter than his hair. The hair was darker. And the brown eyes, I could see the eyes. And the reason we had, I could see this because we had a car at the time. It was a Electra, right?
Grand Marquis, 1980s.
So it's lights on the side where the two doors meet the four doors and the passenger door and the front passenger side. Between the doors was a light that was 11 inches long, about an inch wide. That was a dimly lit white light. So if you drove across highways, you could see the car. Out of the front side of our sides where the blinkers normally would be, there was another extra little light there that glowed as well. So it gave you a glow off the side of the car that wasn't just blinkers or anything. It was really lights. So this light that was here in the middle was the one that illuminated this guy for me to see him even more.
Because I was driving. And
Phyllis drove.
I was driving at the time.
And she went really slow as we came up to Bigfoot. And she's going so slow. I knew we couldn't take a picture of him. You don't want to make them scared. You don't want to hurt them in any way or frighten them because you don't know what they can do. They can probably hold your car and not take it like that. So he was so close to the side, there was nowhere to pull off the car if you had a flat tire. There was only like this much of sand on the road. If you had a pullover, you couldn't. And after the sand, there was a sloping that went down. So he was standing within the sloping section somewhere he could stand to stand up. So all we could see from where we were was his lower waist up, like belly button up. That's what we saw. And he was already taller than the car when you're looking up at him. So that he's got to be 10 feet. He was huge. His head was huge. He was huge. And just looking at like this at the glass window of the car, I'm like this, looking up at him. And his eyes followed me, but I telepathically said to him, "You're beautiful. We love you. Stay safe." That's what I telepathically said to him. And as we were going slow, Phyllis was driving pretty slow. He sees me. He looks down and he follows me with his eyes. And his mouth was not mad or anything. He's like almost like that. It was like that. And so benevolent and sweet. I described his nose. If I drew it,
it was like a Santa Claus nose.
If you imagine, the old cartoon or an old drawing of Coca-Cola Santa Claus. If you remember that little button nose he has, the little bump here, like a little pudgy nose part here, and then his nose. That's what his nose looked like. It was a short nose, not a long nose, but for his face, it fit for Bigfoot. But he had a long spot here between his mouth to nose to lips. And that would males have that anyway in the human race, more of that too. But the nose was definitely a human-looking nose to me. And I said to Phyllis, his nose looks like a Santa Claus nose you would see.
By the way, Mark is an extremely fine animal artist. So he knows animals.
Yeah.
And then a little doodle picture I have of him in one of my books.
Yeah, I mean, it was undeniable. It was definitely a creature of some sort.
If you want to get the art pad, I can pull it out.
We're gonna link to this markbrinkeroff.com as well as intergalacticmission.com,
etuniversalzone.com.
My gosh.
Universal Zone is our podcast now. We'll have a next podcast is this Friday at 9 to 10 p.m. on the Space God, Hercules and the Space Gods. But I posted it to Facebook.
If you give us a link to your show, we'll post it.
Yeah, no, I am so not done. I feel that we could do a show every month and not get to the bottom of this. I mean,
Never. Yeah, people joke with us about that. We could talk about auras. I could talk to you about Reiki healing.
You're more interesting than the Dos Equis guy, I have to tell you. you really... the most interesting man in the world.
Well, that guy.
Truly, truly. I mean, this is
that's much fear.
And I have to tell you, we didn't even get to the stuff I wanted you to tell the story of, but I'm happy we didn't in a way because it lets me know that, you didn't just save your best stories for that night when I met you. I mean, we didn't even talk about...
Yeah, well.
I don't even remember we talked about
it. I mean, you told me about the angel with your doorman, which we don't have time to get into now, but we're going to in the future. And also, just to tease this for the listeners, Mark may have been the inspiration, seems like very much was the inspiration, for one of Steven Spielberg's greatest films of all time. So... I definitely want you both on this show again, if you're open to it, to go more into that, as well as just explain more of what's happening in this planet, because, I mean, you've really blown my mind so many times. I need to recover.
Well, just say,
I love it.
Tell them home is just my spaceship. It's where oversouls are. And that's the inspiration for that movie. So that's where they got it from. But there's other information.
But don't give anything away. It's like I believe that Mark's view of reality, if people could actually embrace it, they'd be so happy. It would be just absolutely.
I'm fascinated by it, and I want to keep understanding it. I'm sorry we did. We went long, but not even as long as I would have wanted to go. However, I think this will be good for people. Yeah, let's do it.
No, it's okay. It's great. We enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, if we do angels, we could do a whole thing with angelics in the nature kingdom, and we can get into what happened that day. And my doorman is still our doorman. So
I know that's the most remarkable thing.
You said, did that happen with you and many years ago? He would have, yes, it's real, it happened. But,
this is a good tease, I think, for the listeners. That'll
so thank you for having us on.
Yeah, no, thank you both. You're awesome. Love it. Love that you're also in New York City. Mark Brinkerhoff, Phyllis Brinkerhoff, thank you both again for coming on.
Thank you
Greg, God bless you, and Adonai Vasu Varagas.
Thank you. Mazel tov to you. I wish I had some awesome higher frequency language to say to Mark and Phyllis, but for now I'll just say thanks. What an awesome conversation. Loved it. What is going on with that guy? I want to know your thoughts. Write me at The Greg Bornstein on Instagram. And remember, the live premiere of the video is on the Open Loops Podcast YouTube channel. I'm Greg Bornstein. Much love. Talk to you soon.